Geek Actually is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks for your donations. If you want to get involved, send an email to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. Hello and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 38 for June 6, 2009. And yes, before you say anything, I know we weren't here last week. It was a big mistake, but we're here now.
What, like we forgot?
No, we just ran into all sorts of issues. All right, let's introduce people around this table before we get started.
You're not going to tell them you're in rehab or something.
No, I'm not in rehab. You're the one in rehab. Okay, joining me here live in the studio, it's actually kind of chaotic. We have the voice you're hearing already is Mirren Lee. Thank you very much for joining me.
My pretty.
Now, you're actually heading back to Cabot Cove this evening.
Oh, thank God. I want to go home to my island, yes.
So she's going back to Melbourne this evening, so we wish you a safe journey on that
sleeper train.
Ooh,
I just love that.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, sorry.
And now, just to add to the mayhem...
It's all Katrina's fault.
We're also joined in studio by Katrina Smith. How are you?
I'm good, hello.
So we have we got a full board in the studio here. Nobody on Skype, which is good because we don't have any Cylon voices today.
I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, thank God. That's good.
Now, before we go any further, we will apologize for not being on last week. It was Little Geek's birthday and all sorts of other chaotic stuff. It was just like, no, enough, too much, have to just postpone.
Oh, don't tell me about the labor. Show me the baby.
Thank you, Katrina, for that lovely snort. That was lovely.
I had to say, you know, show business. Must go on, but we just did it.
Yeah, screw that. All right. We're also going through a few changes here at Geek Actually.
It's puberty.
Yes, puberty. We're going through.
Is there a song? Changes.
All right. Calm down for a second. We're going through a few changes here at Geek Actually because we are actually going out live on Ustream as of June 27th. And people say, why aren't you doing it right now? Well, because we've got to get a few things prepared hardware-wise, component-wise here. But
finish rehab.
I will just give you some times and some dates. So on the 27th, the show will be much more regular because it's going to take its Metamucil. It's going to be much more regular because we are going out 11 a.m. every Saturday morning on Ustream. So because we're going out live, we've got to make it much more consistent. So now, just so everybody knows what those times are.
Why is he committing himself? I can't believe it.
I've got to do these things. So just so you all know, in different time zones, I can't give you everybody's time zone, but I did do a little bit of quick calculations, and I worked out that 11 a.m. Saturday, which is AEST, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which works out to UTC plus 10.
Jesus.
Okay.
Do you even know what UTC is?
No. It's the...
Under the clock?
I think antibiotics helped it.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, which works out to 9 a.m. Australian Western Time, which is not too bad, which is 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Savings Time for the Americans out there, but that will actually be on June 26th, a Friday, because of the time difference. So it'll be
unless you were born in the equinox of the full moon and your rising house is Aquarius.
So all you
I don't know why you're not saying Greenwich Mean Time.
Because everything's working to UTC now. I don't know why.
And David's birthday on the 24th, and so presents are gratefully accepted.
That's right. My birthday's on the 24th of June, so please.
Particularly cashable presents.
Yes.
We are taking donations on the Geek Actually website. No. All right. And for those who live on the East Coast of America in New York,
too fucking bad.
UTC minus 4, that is, it'll be June 26th at 9 p.m. So, that gives you that.
Checks now, in for his birthday
all right,
early.
Settle down. The other piece of housekeeping is that the Podbean account, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, just to remind you again, because it's now like 0 hour, the Podbean account is being destroyed at the end of this week. It is no longer going to be active.
Podbean.
The entire podcast has been brought home, and if you use anything other than iTunes, if you use iTunes, do nothing, the feed's been changed. If you use anything other than iTunes, change your feed readers to geekactually.com/feed/podcast. That's the new feed, and you'll be able to get all your episodes from there. But if, as I say, if you use iTunes, do nothing. It's the feed is going through. Okay, so that is where the show is going in the next couple of weeks. Now, for today's show, because I have Katrina and I have Mirren, we're actually going to do something a little different. We're going to be very film-centric today.
Oh, it's Universal Time.
Universal Time. There you go.
What's the C stand for? Universal Time Clock.
Ah, there you go.
Okay, I'm sorry. Right. It's bothering me.
All right, so today we're actually going to do little to no tech because...
Yay!
Next week, Apple is actually making their WWDC big announcement. It's all going to be iPhone 3.0 software and blah blah blah. So we're probably going to do a very tech heavy show next week. So we're going to do a very film heavy show because Katrina and I actually have two films we're going to review. We will get to those.
And Mirren doesn't need to see them because she knows why she hates them.
And Mirren doesn't need to see them, but Mirren saw something else this week, and we'll come to that in a second because we're very surprised because the non-geek strikes. But before we do anything, I think we need to address the David Carradine situation. Now, this we're gonna walk a very fine line.
Well, why don't we talk about, you know, can't we set it up?
All right, well, let's set it up. You set it up for us, Mary.
All right. Because we have listeners around the world, and something happened in Australia this week. And Katrina and I are both black comedy lovers. I think David is as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have a group down here called The Chaser, and they do a thing called The Chaser's War on Everything. And they're usually guys who, as Katrina says, do guerrilla comedy.
Yes, they don't really do black comedy. It's more
and they have
comedy.
Been,
yes,
and they have been remarkably comedy. Funny in
yes,
places.
And they've been around for a long time, and they do
they're
pranks.
They're not big favorites of mine, I must
no,
say.
Me no,
no me either. But
I don't
I
like
think
comedy. It stresses me.
No, exactly.
What I find with the Chaser boys is that when they strike gold, they are incredibly clever. They're very brave. I just don't always think they're always that funny.
Right. Well, this week they decided to do. We have a thing. Some of you may know. I don't know who has it. Make a Wish Foundation. Now, the Make a Wish Foundation grants wishes to kids who are sick. They don't have to be dying. They just be sick. And so usually it's kids who have cancer and they're getting better and stuff like that. You know, under treatment or whatever. And so what they decided would be very funny was to do a parody called Make a Realistic Wish Foundation and tell these kids, they set it up, would look like pretend kids, saying, hey, you want to go to Disneyland? Oh, here, have an old stick instead. You're going to die anyway. Well, not surprisingly, nobody thought this was funny, and their show's been pulled for 2 weeks. The Prime Minister's denounced them, blah, 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 blah. And I just thought it'd be interesting to talk about what is black comedy, because it when it's done properly, black comedy is hysterical. Mm-hmm. I can give a couple of examples of black comedy jokes. One was sent to me this week, and... just bear in mind, Katrina's a Catholic. Okay, the joke.
Yes, but I'm very angry with the current Pope and the previous one. So it's all right. I'm a Catholic. I'm a tempered Catholic.
Okay, then you won't mind the joke.
I can't guarantee that.
What do you give the? Here's a black comedy joke. What do you give the pedophile who has everything?
What?
A bigger parish. So there has to be in black comedy. There you've also got things like, I cleaned my attic. It was such a mess. I found Anne Frank. And you couldn't do that the day after Anne Frank died in Belsen, but you could do it. It was a Joan Rivers joke. If a person can do it, if it's enough time, because comedians often say too soon, you know.
But look at Joan Rivers. I mean, she talked about her husband's suicide.
Yes.
And one of her jokes was, I had his ashes spreaded in the department store because I wanted to be able to visit him regularly.
That's right, exactly. But
and one, it was her husband.
It was her husband.
And sufficient time had passed.
And exactly.
Right. There's issues, and it's like black people being able to make black jokes.
That's
people
right.
with HIV AIDS being able to make jokes about that, or people in wheelchairs being able to make jokes about people
and
in
there
wheelchairs.
Has to be a little bit of accuracy. In this particular instance with the Chaser, there was no accuracy. I mean, as we know, David's son, my grandson, Nikki, he is now a leukemia survivor. And when he was under treatment, he went on a Make-A-Wish trip.
I was about to say, I actually found the whole thing particularly off-color because, as you say, little geek Nicholas is a recovered leukemic. And he still is not in the completely cured basket yet, but he's completely off treatment and everything. But Make-A-Wish sent him interstate to go to theme parks. And they do a wonderful job at doing what they do. And I think... to make fun of this organization is actually kind of off color.
And because it's based on a false premise that the kids are just going to die anyway. So it was completely and utterly not funny on any level. And yet when black humor is done, there is a movie called Little Murders by Jules Pfeiffer, and it's pure black comedy. It was made in the 60s, and it's just, you sit there going, it's the laughter where you go, I can't believe I'm laughing at this, but it is so funny. And
but look at Death at a Funeral, okay? Yeah. So there's a coffin, and at some point they somehow drug a dwarf and put him in the coffin. So one guy's, Alan Tudyk's been accidentally given ecstasy or something, so he thinks he can hear knocking in the coffin. So before this, he's knocked the coffin over and the body comes out. So it's like a lot of, that's black comedy. And then when the dwarf finally bursts out of the coffin, that's black comedy.
The TV series Black Books with Dylan Moran, I've discovered this.
I saw him.
Yes, and he does a lot of black comedy where you sit there going, this is just so gross. I can't believe what he's doing, but it's so funny. And you've got to believe that if physical comedy's involved, you can't believe the person really got hurt, and so on and so on.
Look at
so
Fargo, right?
Oh, Fargo.
Fargo is a very good example of black comedy.
Look at just about any Joel and Ethan Coen film.
Yeah.
Has many aspects of
black
comedy.
But I mean, when you've got somebody being fed through a wood chopper and you actually can laugh, that's black comedy.
That's black comedy, exactly. So we now come to the weird thing that was David Carradine, because unfortunately, even though he just died like yesterday, the whole death has black comedy surrounding it.
All right, now let me just state right from the offset that we're not making fun of David Carradine dying. I mean, it's a tragedy. I mean, as a child, I grew up watching Kung Fu, and I particularly liked him in Kill Bill 2. And you know, I think it's very sad that he has died and all this sort of stuff. What is actually humorous? What is actually kind of striking a chord with me and going, now this is just bizarre, is the reporting of
so
this
often
death. So I've got in front of me the Sydney Morning Herald here in Australia has got an article about it, because I woke up yesterday to a news report, which I only heard like half of. This David Carradine found in a closet with a rope tied around his neck and other body parts. He's dead at 72. No suspicious circumstances. And
pardon?
I kind of went, pardon? No suspicious. He's got a rope tied around his neck and other body part. What are you talking about? And he's in a closet, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so more information has kind of come to light. Now, where this gets bizarre is because, A, it's in Thailand, so I don't think the Thai police guy's English is particularly good.
Probably.
And then you've got the combination of paragraphs and how it's worded. So I'm just going to read this exactly as it is, and I'm going to massacre the Thai name. I do apologize to any Thai listeners because I don't know how to pronounce his name. But down in the article, he actually wrote, there was a rope tied around his neck and another rope tied at his sex organ. And the two ropes were tied together and hung in the closet, Lieutenant General Warapong Saoprecha told reporters. Under these circumstances, we cannot be sure that he committed suicide, but he may have died from masturbation. And I think at that point, I go, pardon? You can't die of masturbation. All right, you might die of autoasphyxiation. You might die of auto. You don't die of masturbation.
Exactly.
You know? But then we go into the next paragraph, which is, this is now the Sydney Morning Herald reporting, which says, Carradine was in Thailand to shoot a film called Stretch.
Yes.
And I go, God, come on, guys.
Exactly. And this is as bad as when the first original Holocaust TV series was on with Meryl. Meryl Streep was discovered and everything. This was years ago, for people who don't know. She made her name in this TV series, Holocaust. And unfortunately, there was a big problem with the commercial breaks, because here we are having the Jews being massacred in the ovens, and then we cut to a commercial.
And actually, just before we went to commercial, there are two Nazi soldiers walking along, and he goes, what's that smell? Because the stacks are burning the Jews behind him. Mm. And he goes, boy, that's it's a bad smell. And we suddenly cut to commercial break, and in America at the time, there was this particular cleaner, and the ad campaign had the Snoopy Sniffer. And she comes into the house going, smelling the whole room. And it cuts, what's that smell? And you get straight to the set. the station was inundated with calls of people complaining, saying, how dare you put the Snoopy Sniffer ad on right at that moment?
And so I just thought the whole thing was – is. And if you think there won't be fodder now with the late-night comics and stuff like that, they will. And it does reduce his death to a bit of a joke, unfortunately. But then again, if you are going to mess around with, you know, I don't understand autoeroticism. It's bizarre to me. As I was saying earlier, I find that if you're working on a film, the last thing I want to do is come home and tie myself up. But hey, that's just me. But I just really think it's important that because, you know, eventually I know you want to start doing different shows that cover whole things. And an entire show on black comedy would be really interesting because it's my passion. And you're writing a script, Katrina, on black comedy.
Well, I suspect I'm Annie Gray. I don't think I've got the fortitude to go as hard as they fuck.
Have you ever seen the film Very Bad Things, the Peter Berg film?
No, I haven't.
That's pretty bad.
What about the one at the table when they're killing off the people that they
eat? Last Supper.
Last Supper.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you have to see that. And hello. Shallow Grave. And Shallow how about Grave. One of the first original black comedies that is just hilarious? Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's about, but it's got to be done in a particularly sensitive way, and then it is hysterical. And I would hate to see the concept of black comedy itself being tarnished because it's stupid.
But these boys haven't done black comedy.
No, they don't. It's not their area.
It's not their area. You know, as you say, they're trying to be Borat, and sometimes it works, but really it just feels like they are stuck in a university review.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
yes, I agree.
Why don't you graduate to some adult comedy?
Yes, I agree. So that's the little thing on it, and I just hope, you know, I put my two cents in that hope sometime there will be a show on black comedies and we could talk about all the different ones and everything because I have wet myself over, I mean, let's face it, it's a black comedy and Something About Mary when the dog's on fire. You know, that was hysterical. And I'm sitting there going,
that's
the poor dog.
That verges on slapstick.
Yeah, but it was still the poor dog. But, you know, you're in hysterics. So.
But now, you know, a really good example. I think this is the really interesting thing. As you say, you have to not think a thing's actually been
hurt.
Right. And a really good example of that is in A Fish Called Wanda, where Michael Palin's character is a big animal lover, and he's trying to kill this old woman, and she's got four or five little yappy dogs on leashes, and he keeps killing the dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. And at one point...
That's bleak.
Well, apparently, at one point, when he dropped something heavy, and it squashed the dog, and then you pull the thing off, and the dog, apparently they had to reshoot it, because in a test screening, they had one version of this flat dog that had a bit of gore coming out, and then audience just ripped it that they couldn't hack it. So they had another version where the dog is just a flat, like a little, as if you cut out the fur, and the audience thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
But as you say, it's that distancing from pain and agony.
Funniest home videos. You've got
No, I can't watch that.
No, I can't either, because they keep trying to say people aren't hurt, and I know they are. But the point is...
I sit there, I go... Fracture, rotator cuff tear.
Absolutely, but the kids don't. I mean, Nikki at 10.
Nurse Katrina.
I know, I'm just saying. But that and that
is... Well, hello to my one fan out there who likes the medical references.
that is slapstick black. And I just... And
I hate slapstick.
I do too.
No,
I'll
qualify that. I love slapstick in real life.
Yeah.
When you actually see something and you know that the person's not been hurt. I once worked in a rehab unit, not where they had drugs, where they actually had broken things than things that were in fact snapped. And... There was this doctor, and I was a young therapist at the time, and this doctor had just given these people a biggest mouthful, and he had the white coat, and he was flapping like a big white bird. I was so fucking cool. Anyway, the way this ward worked was because there were people that had acquired brain impairment, and they, in fact, when you came in, the doors would, you know, like open and close, Star Trek style. But to get out, you had to reach up really high and press a green button to open the door. So it stopped anybody in a wheelchair being able to reach up because they were in fact confused and shouldn't leave the ward. So it was very funny. I saw this doctor with this flapping coat, flapping, and he'd just been really rude and mean to, I think, the nursing staff or somebody. Anyway, he came flying down the corridor. We're in the OT department and we're looking up this corridor, and he just bounced off the glass like a bird because he was so busy giving it. And we all went, and just dropped below the desk and just peed ourselves laughing.
Yeah.
Because he was like a bird on a windscreen.
Yes.
Shit, it was funny.
And he deserved it.
He deserved
it.
And he bounced off and then he like looked around to see if anyone had seen him.
And when that's captured in film, well, that works.
Yes.
So, okay.
Thank you for my digression.
Yes.
That's okay. Now, I think before we go into anything else, I'm going to play here just a little bit, just because we have now talked about it all and everything else. I think as a little bit of a tribute, I'm going to play a little bit of David Carradine.
Okay.
This is actually probably my favorite David Carradine moment. This is actually the Superman speech from Kill Bill 2, where he describes American mythology and Superman. So we won't play the whole thing because it goes for 3 minutes, but we'll play a little bit of it just as a tribute to the late David Carradine.
As you know, I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating. Take my favorite superhero, Superman. Not a great comic book, not particularly well drawn. But the mythology. The mythology is not only great, it's unique.
How long does this shit take to go into effect?
About 2 minutes. Just long enough for me to finish my point. Now, a staple of the superhero mythology is there's the superhero and there's the alter ego. Batman is actually Bruce Wayne. Spider-Man is actually Peter Parker. When that character wakes up in the morning, he's Peter Parker. He has to put on a costume to become Spider-Man. And it is in that characteristic Superman stands alone. Superman didn't become Superman. Superman was born Superman. When Superman wakes up in the morning, he's Superman. His alter ego is Clark Kent. His outfit with the big red S. That's the blanket he was wrapped in as a baby when the Kents found him. Those are his clothes. What Kent wears, the glasses, the business suit, that's the costume. That's the costume Superman wears to blend in with us. Clark Kent is how Superman views us. And what are the characteristics of Clark Kent? He's weak. He's unsure of himself.
I love that speech.
Very good. Can I also point out that Kill Bill has black comedy in it?
Absolutely.
Up the keister. When she does the kill scene in the nightclub, we don't care those people are being hacked to death. We think it's hysterical. She's
actually,
being beaten
in blood. I'll give you a perfect example of what you're talking about. The scene in Pulp Fiction, in fact, Tarantino is a master of this. The scene in Pulp Fiction where he turns around to talk to the guy in the backseat, his gun discharges and blows the guy's head off.
Yes.
The audience starts laughing at this point because they're not particularly shocked by it. They're sitting there going, man, the mess that we made and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so, of course, this is very black comedy.
But they weren't tied to that guy.
No.
That's why we know that, you know, you don't kill the dog that everybody loves. You don't kill the kid that everybody loves and stuff and so on and so on.
Well, you know, in Kill Bill, the Lucy Liu character, when she's fighting with the Uma Thurman character, and Uma Thurman had said, I've got this sword, and she goes, bullshit, they don't make those anymore, and she cuts the top of her head off, and just before she hits the ground after the top of her head's been cut off, she goes, oh, so-and-so sword.
Yeah. exactly.
Or the scene where she's fighting with, is it Viveka Fox? Where they're having a huge fight in the kitchen, and they both stop for a minute when the daughter and they kind of hide their weapons. It's like, very good.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is the black comedy that I love, that people are laughing in spite of themselves. Like, I don't think I should be laughing at this, but they can't help themselves. So, yeah.
So, veil to David Carradine.
Yes.
And remember, kids, masturbation can kill you.
The Catholics are right. No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, stop it. David. Too soon, David.
Terrible. I'm sorry. All right, I just had to do that. I'm sorry. All right, now, the next thing we're going to talk about here very quickly is the fact that Mirren, certified non-geek.
Non-Trekkie.
The certified non-geek saw Star Trek last night.
I'm still damp. I'm a damp cougar.
And I think mini review would be?
I was surprised. Well, the thing is, for me, I love humor, which is why when watching the Star Trek series, I love the episodes like Trouble with Tribbles and things like that. But it was done so well, and everything that has been said about it is true. Christopher Pine's doing a great job. He does remind me a lot of Paul Walker, and I'm hoping in Fast and the Furious.
Oh, sorry.
No. Let me just say, in the first one, that I don't mean his acting style. I mean the fact that here's a kid, you look at it, you think he's just going to be a pretty boy, but he's got charisma and acting chops and all that. In the first one, in the very first one, I thought, oh, we'll see more of this guy. I turned to Dave and said, we'll see more of Paul Walker. And then his career seemed to die, and I don't get why.
Because Paul Walker
because
had nothing to back...
he's a shit actor.
He had nothing to back it up.
See, I don't agree, and you're wrong. But anyway, I did like Christopher Pine.
Chris Pine.
I did want Spock to have a little higher voice, because as you know, I'm very...
Lower.
Oh, you're upsetting me, Katrina. Stop it. But
don't disagree with her.
I do love Simon Pegg with a love that's true and real. You're right. He was great. And
I love this little sidekick too.
The only thing, and you know I feel about this, is I'm not an Eric Bana fan like everybody else is, and I'm not because I think Eric Bana is a one level actor, and I think this became almost ridiculous with how I'm so angry, Big Romulan angry, and all I could think is what Alan Rickman would have done with that part, or Kevin Spacey, or even Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Philip Seymour Hoffman brought a little bit of humor when he did it in Mission Impossible. Was that three? Was it or whatever?
Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah, okay.
I gave up after 1.5.
Well,
I never saw three.
Well,
Mission Impossible 3 is actually a pretty good film.
It's actually better.
I quite like it.
Because of Philip Seymour Hoffman
and J.J. Abrams took it over.
Yeah, exactly, and I just thought that it was so wonderful, and using the digital, you know, complete digital was just incredible. And I agree with all, you know, I'm sure the Trekkies wet themselves when the ship came out of the clouds. And I actually got a real chill when the credits unfolded to Star Trek, and the humor, and it just really was fantastic. There, of course,
and Michael Giacchino's score is fabulous.
Absolutely, and every time you do time travel, you're going to have logic vacuums, but we'll just ignore those. And I did enjoy it tremendously, and I hope the next one, you know, they don't screw it up. Because
even at the last minute, I've got to tell you, even at the last minute, she was trying to get out of this. I took her to see it last night.
Yeah.
And at about half hour before we were about to leave, she goes, you sure you don't want to go see I Love You, Man?
It could be, you know. Because I wasn't sure, but it was. It was just a really nice combination. And kudos to the casting people and whoever cast it, and I should look that up, but because in America casting is considered seriously, they have awards and everything, and the person who put that, or the group that put that together, was just fantastic. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it was. You haven't seen it and you're not a Trekkie, go see it.
One of my favorite bits. I'm going to launch it. So there's two favorite bits. It was right at the end when the Kirk character comes onto the bridge and he does a little William Shatner head.
Oh yes,
and
yes,
I'm like,
beautiful.
It was
beautiful.
Just a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? Oh, just backing up to the Eric Bana thing. I don't like an actor and they can do no wrong. But I sincerely believe that I don't think the Eric Bana baddie got enough screen time to develop. I know you disagree because you figure
no
you
small
can get...
No small parts.
But I mean, you know, I felt it was a little bit like the Danny Kaye becoming a knight, Vessel in the Pestle.
Hello, Jack Nicholson made his career in a small part in Easy Rider.
It was like, and here's my dead wife, and I'm really cross, and here was that, and I've got big buggy boots,
because
and look, I've got a cranky bone that's going to go in your mouth. Like, it felt like...
You're wrong.
No.
Wrong.
And I'm done.
And you're wrong. And the next movie, and the next movie, and the next movie will show that eventually people start admitting I'm right. Just like they did with Eyes Wide Shut. Everyone went, oh, Kubrick's a genius. And I went, what is this piece of shit? Oh. And then all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, it wasn't a very good movie.
I hated 2001 A Space Odyssey. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Get out the paddles for David. Clear.
Oh, no. Geeks around the world lost their wings. Oh, no. That's
I do believe in Kubrick. I do.
I don't think so, Dave.
Oh, Katrina. Before David bans me from Geek, actually.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
You see how wrong she is so often? It's just, you know. It's
unbelievable.
You know, I have the ability to be right across a huge number of areas.
All right, now, we actually have two feature films to review. Katrina and I have both seen them. Miran hasn't seen them.
It doesn't matter. I have.
But Miran will weigh in.
She'll have an opinion on a range of subjects related to each.
We're going to review. The first one we're going to review is actually a film called State of Play, which for the Americans out there, they're going to say, we got this 4 weeks ago. It's like, yeah, I know, guys.
You don't know what we thought about it.
Yeah, but also
that's a good one.
Also, it takes us a couple of weeks to get stuff. So yeah.
And to think about it.
Now,
I'm going to.
We're fighting the internet right now because for some reason, I can't get access to the trailers that I normally get access to. So we're actually using YouTube, which I can't stand. So if there are delays or pauses, it's because YouTube has to catch up. This is a little bit of the trailer from State of Play. The reason why we're going to do State of Play first is because the second film we're going to review, I think there might be a few things to talk about. So we'll just do State of Play real quick. Now, State of Play, the trailer, hopefully we'll get it through YouTube. I don't know. We'll find out here. Oh, wait. YouTube, hello.
Otherwise, we'll act it out.
Coffee's free for friends of the press. I heard a young woman was murdered.
Who told you that?
You just did.
Sonia Baker, a valued member of my staff, died this morning.
Congressman Collins, he's an old friend of yours, is that right?
Good reporters don't have friends, only sources.
You okay?
Collins was allegedly having an affair with a young woman.
Want to know everything that we can about her.
We've got 8 hours.
They've got 56 cameras. There are 3 blind spots in the entire system, and Sonia Baker went down in one of them.
Come on, Cal, leave that alone.
Close your eyes. He's checking out your cell phone.
Did we just break the law?
Nope. That's what you call damn fine reporting. The casings at the crime scene were untraceable. That is the mark of a pro. Who might have wanted Sonia dead?
The thesis that we are pursuing involves a certain company that Congressman Collins is investigating.
She had access to everything we were doing, and I believe they killed her for it.
This is a full-blown conspiracy.
You gotta protect yourself, man.
You cannot connect anything back to me.
It's a full-blown conspiracy. Cool. you gotta love full-blown conspiracies. All right, so...
I find that staggering. You know that I think Russell is no good with dialects, particularly American or English. But he sounds exactly like Philip Seymour Hoffman. Is he mimicking? Is he channeling him? What is going on there? Very interesting. I was hearing Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, really? I was just hearing Russell Crowe's generic American
accent.
Maybe it was
the same thick beard.
Yeah.
Maybe you can talk any way you like, and if it gets through thick enough beard and...
Same timbre.
Well,
it's like when you said that Nicole Kidman was channeling Meg Ryan To Die For.
No, not To Die For. The horrible film, In the Cut.
Oh, In the Cut, yeah, In the Cut.
The other way around. It was Meg Ryan was channeling
But you said
Nicole Kidman in The Cut.
And
at the same time, in things like The Stepford Wives and practically everything that Nicole Kidman was doing,
she was channeling Meg Ryan. That's very weird. Anyway, you guys can do
that. It is. It's very spooky.
Maybe it's like Prelude to a Kiss and they swap souls.
Maybe.
And all I'll right. just say it up front. Everybody knows I can't stand Russell. So
yeah,
And I always think who else could have done it.
Before you do a recast, can we talk about the movie at hand?
At hand. Well, shut up for a second. All right, so State of Play is
not allowed to say shut up. That's fighting words in my family.
It's my studio. I'll say shut up.
Yeah, now we say get fucked sooner than we would say shut up. Shut up's the really big one.
Okay, get fucked then. All right, there's our explicit tag. All right.
Does everybody know it was a series to start with?
You're not going to be a chance to say anything.
All right.
State of Play
Give me the duct tape. I'll put it across my head.
State of Play is a political thriller based on a 2003 British miniseries. Thank you. You're happy now?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Basically, it's about, in the case of the American film, I haven't seen the British one, which I would really like to see now. Mm. But in the American version, it's basically a Senate committee is investigating a Blackwater-style private army that is, you know, doing stuff in Iraq and so forth. And during the course of this investigation, one of the aides is killed, and the investigation by the reporters basically start to uncover some sort of massive conspiracy. We're actually going to do this one without any spoilers because I don't think there's actually need to, and because it is a political thriller, we're going to let you discover these things for yourself, because Katrina and I both actually quite enjoyed this film.
Yes.
Yes. Now, Katrina, what did you think of it?
Well, remaining on the correct side of the no spoiler tape, I will now attempt to rein myself in and also attempt to be brief. Now, I thought, you know, it felt like something from about the 70s or 80s. The pacing was very different.
Exactly.
It wasn't that whole...
I was actually going to say, it reminds me of Three Days of the Condor,
yeah,
or All the President's Men. Or...
But you said it felt compressed, but that's because it was a six-episode miniseries.
Well, that's a different issue.
That was
the
more
downside.
About character, sub-character, yeah. You know, minor character development.
We'll
but
get
anyway,
to that downside in a second. There are a couple of problems.
There are a couple of downsides. But anyway, I thought overall it was taut, except for Russell. He was a little bit fat, but then again, so am I. He played the part quite well. He wasn't doing the I'm pretending to be a crusty reporter. He actually gave that impression. As you say, the dialogue was interesting. I thought Helen Mirren was great as the cranky editor, pulled between, corporate loyalties.
Which, can I just say there, it would have been interesting to see Bill Nighy in the original.
Absolutely, Bill Nighy was
in
the
original. Sure it would. Yeah. Ben Affleck is too thin. David thinks I've got an issue with that. You look at that man's cheekbones, because I know he had to bulk up for that. What was that one he did playing the Steve Reeves character?
Hollywoodland.
Hollywoodland. Yeah. And obviously he had to be a little bit pudgy for that, but I'm worried. His cheekbones are very prominent, and you never saw him out of a suit, and he look at those wrists, styloid process. I'm worried about him.
Ooh, okay.
He needs a couple of baked dinners. Anyway, what I really liked was the fact that I felt it ran along at a good pace. I thought Justin Bateman is this sleazy
player. Oh, I love Justin.
He was reptilian.
He was
unrecognizable.
I've never seen him play a character like
he
that.
He was phenomenal. What was going on behind the eyes? Because last time I would have seen him would have been the
Arrested
Will Smith.
Oh,
no, the Will Smith. Where
Hancock.
Where he was just this beautiful.
He's always a nice guy.
He was this beautiful, open-hearted guy. And he was unrecognizable. You've got to see it just for him.
Oh,
he
I
is
will,
worth
for
it.
Her.
This little potted piece
her.
Of gold, even
Helen
if you
Mirren.
Didn't like
yeah.
the other stuff. The wife. Now, who's that taut woman who again needs to eat more? What's her name? Sean Penn's wife.
Robin Penn.
Yeah.
Oh, well, she's just doing these hang dog chicks, and her hair was.
Luckily, her part was very small.
I know,
so
but her whole hair weighed more than the rest of her body.
Oh, she should be so.
Although I did think Rachel McAdams was quite good.
Oh, that's why I was a bit funny.
Well, I'm going to jump in because you've been talking about them all.
No, so. You told me to be briefer than I was going to be.
Children.
I really liked. I thought Rachel Thingo did a good job, and I liked the fact they didn't go. Oh, that's a bit of a spoiler. I thought what's her face?
Rachel
McAdams
did a very good job, and I thought it was good pacing, and I would have liked a little bit more background on some of those other characters, but as you say, if it was a miniseries that was condensed, then that makes sense. And I didn't feel ripped off. I felt quite happy.
I was quite happy. I thought one of the performances that you didn't mention was Jeff Daniels, who for the early part of his career
he's a lot fatter.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Daniels.
Some to ban.
I could have the Katrina fat thin monitor.
Jeff Daniels spent his entire early part of his career playing the nice guy, and then suddenly to turn up in this, and he is just so sleazy and horrible.
No, I don't know if it's
again,
sleazy.
That's
it's
weird.
Cold. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, and he does it so well. And
he
this
does.
Thing, as he's getting older and he's getting puffier, he's coming across, he's got this nicer, this kind of... Bleh,
maybe as his BMI is indicating unhappiness.
What I think is interesting is if you have a look at the British cast and you go that Russell would have been played by John Sim.
Of course, who was in Life on Mars, the decent one,
the decent
not the
one.
Shithouse one. I'm going to talk about that later if we've got time, please.
If we got time. Ben Affleck was played by David Morrissey. The Rachel McAdams was Kelly MacDonald, and of course Helen Mirren was played by Bill Nighy.
Kelly MacDonald the one that was the girl in the cafe with the Bill Nighy, like she's a Scottish girl?
I think she is. Let me look. I saw that by accident,
and I love that.
And
was she also in with Colin Firth, Nanny McPhee, as the young housekeeper?
I'm just looking her up for you now. She was in...
Nanny McPhee, yes. She was
so
in Vanity.
Nanny McPhee,
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
And the Girl in the Cafe, yes,
girl
you're right.
Cafe, yes.
She's nice.
I'm a legend.
You are
I have
a legend.
No computer in front of me,
wow.
Folks.
Well
there is,
done.
It's coming
it's
out
head.
Of my mind.
Well done.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
I think,
she's good. She's
I think
good.
The long
you're
and
good.
Short of it with State of Play is that it was actually a... nice throwback to 70s style political thrillers, and not to say that it's a perfect film, and the biggest complaint, I think both of us felt the same way, which was because the original was a 6-hour miniseries, it just felt like there wasn't enough time for some of the
subplots
and we don't want to give away spoilers, but yeah, there's all sorts of things that happen, and you sit there and go, really, do we need that? You know, and in the miniseries it would have worked, but I think in this you kind of they try to pack too much into a 2-hour running time.
Is there enough in it though for me to put up with having to sit through Russell?
Well, yeah, because I actually think that even if you don't like
it, I think it's worth it for the Justin. I think it's worth the ticket price for Justin Bateman, and he's on for 5 minutes.
Absolutely, but I think Russell also does in this particular case. I have to say that it's a quite bearable performance. He's not being Russell. I'm better than everybody else.
He's not being a gladiator, being a reporter.
No, or he's not being master and commander.
He's got the long hair. He still needs a little bit of hairdresser work. But anyway, what's the guy's name that was the minor sub reporter doing the research? And he's got watery blue eyes. There was the fat guy that was grey with a beard, and there was that guy.
And you know who that fat guy is? That's Josh Mostel. Who is the son of
Zero
Mostel.
Oh, really?
But the young guy with the blue eyes, the watery blue eyes, he's been in everything lately. He was in Supernatural as the baddie. He's been in, like, not one, but he was in CSI the other day, Las Vegas, and he was in Law and Order. I thought, who is this guy sleeping with? He's in everything.
Who was he in the...
Oh, he's a watery blue-eyed bloke. I don't know what his name is.
No, yeah, but what character?
He was one of the researchers.
I don't know what his character name was.
Oh, so it could be this guy, but yeah, because it was like an underling. Anyway, don't waste time on that.
The other thing I have to say, though, why I'd really like to see State of Play, the 2003 miniseries, is the fact that I love Helen Mirren, and I thought she was very nice in this film, but I didn't think she had enough to do, and I actually wanted more from her character. And I'm thinking in the 6-part miniseries that there'll be more to the Bill Nighy character, and we'll get more about that.
Yes,
Helen Mirren put a good bit of... that's him. That's that bloke. Michael Weston. He's the guy with the pale blue eyes.
Right.
That's in everything.
Okay, let's move this along.
He was in House and... Always been in Burn Notice. I watched that. Okay. So he's...
He's in everything.
He's in everything.
But he's in that sort of like, I'm at Streets of San Francisco underling level. I haven't quite broken through. Says she who's broken through nothing, but that's not what I'm
saying. Oh, he's kind of... Oh, he was a detective in House, wasn't he?
I don't know.
He actually did quite a good job. Remember, he's quite funny.
Which one?
Remember in House when he hires a detective?
Oh, was it him?
Private Eye.
Yeah, could it be?
He hires a Private Eye. Okay, he was quite funny.
Sorry.
Again, Katrina, you're wrong, so all right. Because he's quite good.
I didn't say he wasn't good.
Oh, okay.
Well, I said he's in everything.
Okay, yeah.
She wasn't commenting on his performance.
I was saying he's just popping up in everything. He hasn't quite broken through to that.
Isn't it interesting, those actors, it's like Nathan Fillion. He's not a household word, and yet the people who know him love him.
Yes.
It's just interesting.
The other thing I have to say about State of Play, which even Katie, my beloved wife, didn't recognize, was the coroner was Viola Davis, who was the mother in Doubt.
Oh,
yes.
And I didn't even recognize her.
That's interesting.
You know, and it's like I saw her name in the credits, I went, really?
She's very mesmerizing, isn't she? Like, she literally, as you say, the no small parts. She only had probably, 2 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
And she was very, you couldn't take your eyes off her.
Absolutely. She's a really good actress. I'd like to see a lot more of her. All right, so now moving on to our next film, and we're trying to get here quickly because we've got a lot to say about this film. Now, this is a little bit of the trailer from the movie, Terminator Salvation.
Kick your fucking ass!
Oh, no, sorry, that's not it. That was Terminator Salvation.
That's where he's actually being truthful.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, here's Terminator Salvation.
You are bad.
We've been fighting a long time. We are outnumbered by machines. Humans have a strength that cannot be measured. This is John Connor. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance. I thought I knew our enemy. Something has changed. Skynet is taking human prisoners. Replicating human tissue.
Let's see what we've got here.
Not in this future. I don't know that we can win this war.
This thing is something we've never seen before.
My name is Marcus Wright.
You think you're human?
I am human.
All right, and that's Sam Worthington screaming, which he actually does quite a lot in this movie.
Barf, barf, barf. What's the essence of a man? Christian, please come see me for voice classes.
All right, so...
Let's be a good actor.
Let's start, as we should start, with telling people about the movie, and then we can get into our criticism. First of all, Terminator Salvation is the fourth film in the Terminator series started by James Cameron. James Cameron had the good sense to bail out after the second one.
But, is that a pun?
All right. So in this particular chapter, for lack of a better word.
Evacuation.
We are now in the future. It is after Judgment Day, and we are fighting the war against the machines. And John Connor has now been confronted with something that he didn't expect, because, of course, the future keeps changing on him, which is...
Like it does for the rest of us.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Time travel, what a concept. And he basically has to wage his war against Skynet again and again and again and again. We seem to be doing this an awful lot.
That's why they had the phrase ad nauseum.
The film stars Christian Bale, who is all Batman, no Bruce Wayne, in the role of John Connor, Sam Worthington as Marcus Wright, as you heard in the clip, and a completely wasted Bryce Dallas Howard doing absolutely nothing for no apparent reason, and except walking around pregnant. All right, now... I've gotten that out of the way because, you know what, Terminator Salvation, everybody under the sun probably knows, who listens to our podcast knows what it is. Directed by McGee, the man who apparently doesn't need a full name. He's so cool he doesn't need a whole name, and as Slash Filmcast would say, is a fucking liar. But yeah. More of, if you want to find out more about that, go listen to Slash Filmcast. I think it's just wonderful. Before we start spoilers, we're not going to go straight into spoilers. Let's just find out opinions first. No, just got to find opinions first, and then we're going to throw ourselves We're going to throw ourselves into the spoiler zone very quickly because I've got a lot to say about this film.
It's an Olympic pool of spoiler zone.
Okay, yeah. First of all, impressions of the film, without going into spoiler details, what did you think?
Although I knew that it was supposed to be a very poor film, I tried to go in and I thought, I'm going to find gold amongst the excrement. I thought, I'm going to pan this sucker for something sparkly and good.
Kick your fucking ass!
That's right.
You got Arnie's bum, didn't you?
No, wait.
Whoa, spoiler alert.
All right, sorry.
Back up, Mirren.
Everybody knows. God, I mean.
Anyway, I tried. I really, really tried. And some things in it were okay, but just you were mostly left with this sort of disappointed feeling, somewhat like poor sex. It was just bad, you know? It should have all come together.
It's funny you mention that.
And yet it was, and you know... You're not going to ring them again.
Okay, it's funny you mention that. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to have to paraphrase it because unfortunately I did go down there this morning to record him, but he wasn't there. But
that's a good lead-in.
Okay. EB Games in Randwick has an employee. His name is Josh, and I like Josh a lot. He's a very funny guy, and he has some really good opinions, and I was going to get him on tape telling us his opinion because he told it to me yesterday and I walked away from him afterwards without recording it, and I thought, I mulled it over all night and I told Mirren about it. I said, my God, that was so beautiful. I've got to go back and actually get him to record it for the show. But I'll have to paraphrase it because I haven't got it recorded. I'm going to try and get Josh on the show. He said he saw Terminator Salvation and it made him so angry that he wandered around the house for the rest of the night muttering to himself because he was so angry. And he said that nobody could understand, and I did, and that's why he liked talking to me. He said nobody could understand it when he said, it's like fucking an ex-girlfriend. All right?
Oh, and look and see, I came in from another
angle. Absolutely. He said, let me explain. And this is how he paraphrased it. He said, the first two films was the relationship. And you're quite happy with each other. And you're getting along and you're fucking quite nicely with each other and everything's fine. The third film, the relationship is now breaking up, and although it's still okay, it's not great, and you really do realize that you're at the end of this relationship. Then, many years later, you and your ex-partner are both bored, and you look at each other and think, maybe we should fuck. And then you realize afterwards that it was a big mistake, and you really, and it looked comfortable, but it really wasn't. You know,
it's so true, and
it's such a true thing. It's like fucking an ex-girlfriend. You really should not. This film should not have been made.
Yeah,
this is over. This franchise ended.
Let it go.
At Terminator 2, and
which was great. And it, like Mia said, it had humor.
Yeah,
1 and 2.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Had humor.
I would actually go so far as to argue, and I'm one of the very few in the minority that would actually say that I didn't even need Terminator 2.
No, I didn't. I would have been quite happy with
Terminator 1 being the little low budget action adventure film that it was. And it's over. And it was this wonderful time paradox film, and it didn't. It explained itself adequately enough that it's.
Yeah, but I like the Melting Man.
The Melting Man was kind of fun. And look, you know,
what's his name? John Patrick.
James Cameron had some really interesting ideas, and if it wasn't for Terminator 2, ILM wouldn't have been able to.
Patrick John, that's right.
No, Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick.
It's hard when your last name is the first name, and it's hard when they have three first names,
like Sean William Harris or Sean. I don't know these names. Well, you get a real name, just a first name and a last name. That's what I say. You know, I mean.
Okay, so now that was Josh. How I actually felt about this film was I walked away from it thinking.
Bleh.
No, I didn't. I didn't walk away completely revolted. I walked away thinking why?
Why?
I walked away thinking this film wasn't necessary, but I did walk away thinking. It had some really nice blow shit up moments. It had some really nicely staged action sequences, including the one that I thought was great was right at the beginning where the helicopter, where it flips over and he's trying to get out. It's a beautiful piece of camera work with the whole rotating camera.
I've got a whole bit on the camera.
Okay, wait a minute. I think it had some of these great moments. Overall, I think the film is a complete waste of time. And when we get into spoilers, I'll tell you why. And overall, I just walked away thinking that this film was an all right, quote unquote, all right, mediocre action film, but it was a terrible, terrible Terminator film. And it should not have had the name of the Terminator. It should have been made as just some sort of action science fiction film. And we probably would have been a little bit less hard on it if we weren't trying to compare it with something else that, quite frankly, Terminator 1 in particular, is a beloved film. And you sit there and go, we're fucking the ex-girlfriend, you know? And it's like, why are we here?
Well, since it's doing so badly, it's probably probably
absolutely.
Well,
we looked it up on this Box Office Mojo this morning. $200 million film, 15 days into release in the States, it's only made $96 million. This film is tanking.
Oops.
So, good, because McGee's a fucking liar, and I'll tell you why when we get into spoilers.
Like you say that!
We're getting into spoilers now. So your basic premise, Katrina, was it was crap.
Poor. It was a poor film.
No, the bits that I expected to be crappier were okay, and the people that I expected to be really good weren't.
Right, okay.
And stupid script, and you and I were talking about the music.
Okay, we're going to hit it. Okay, for everybody who hasn't seen Terminator Salvation, if you're planning on going to see Terminator Salvation and you don't want things spoiled,
go and plant a tree.
Stop listening now because we are actually...
Go for a half-hour walk.
This podcast...
Ring your mother.
Timer.
We
are going to finish at the end of this review. So if you don't want to hear the spoilers on Terminator Salvation, you can sign off now and come back to us later. We're going to hit spoilers right now. You've been fairly warned. We are going to give away probably everything in this film because I've got a lot to say about this film, and so does Katrina. Are we ready? Spoiler zone. And we'll just... here we go. We'll give an audio cue. Oh, no, I can't. I was about to say I was going to give an audio cue, but I've closed Christian Bale in his kick your fucking ass. So we'll have to move on from there. All right.
What was it he said?
Kick your fucking ass.
All right, here's your cue. Kick your
fucking ass. No! No! No!
No, he won't go to my trailer. He won't! Eat your vegetables.
Here's the first spoiler. That clip, Christian Bale said the reason why he blew up like that was because it was the most emotionally charged scene of the entire shoot, and it was so he was on edge because it was so emotional, this scene, and blah, blah, blah. Katrina, could you identify which scene he would be talking about?
Mate, I was getting an aneurysm just trying to watch this movie. Where were you emotionally connected?
There was no scene that he would have been so emotionally connected
off the hook that he would have lost it. I couldn't find it.
All right, Christian Bale, you're a fucking liar, all right? Second thing, McGee, you're a fucking liar. All the way through production of this film, and especially in the last 6 months of the junket, McGee was saying everything the fans wanted to hear. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to have a cameo. Moon Bloodgood has got a topless scene. We're going for the R rating. We're not pandering to a PG-13. Everything is good. This film is going to be amazing. You're going to see everything that you want to see. And what did he deliver? Absolutely fuck all on any of his things. First of all, the film got rated a PG-13 at the last minute at the cinema in America because they cut everything that would have given it an R rating. He pandered. And we know this for a fact because the famous Moon Bloodgood topless scene, you know where the scene is, because it is the worst piece of cutting I've ever seen in film. She's standing there. She's all dripping wet. She pulls down. She takes off her jacket. She pulls off her arm because she's looking at her wound. Puts her gun up on a thing, and Sam Worthington walks away. Suddenly, cut to, she's fully dressed. Three guys are surrounding her going, "We've been watching you, babe." And he holds up her gun and says, "You looking for this?" Where did they come from? Maybe, where did any of this happen?
Maybe she was doing a memory check, you know, like a monthly.
No, but the point is that they just literally, McGee just literally took a pair of scissors and just went snip, snip, join it together.
No, you're wrong, and I'll tell you why. She did have a topless scene because when her you're not listening. When her helicopter got shot, she had to eject, so the top came off the helicopter.
Ah! Very good. All right, so McGee, you're a fucking liar.
You're a fucking liar.
All right. Now, Danny Elfman's music. Danny Elfman is one of my personal... Danny Elfman is one of my favorite composers, and, you know, I could listen to even his mediocre scores like the Hulk when he did Ang Lee's Hulk. You know, it's a mediocre score, but it's still Danny Elfman, and I could still listen to it. He took Brad Fidel's Terminator music and went, "Do you know what? It's a Terminator film, but I'm not going to do any of that," and threw it over his shoulder and then wrote this mediocre score that doesn't even seem to have any proper sound cues. We're in the middle of an action sequence, no music, in the middle of an action sequence, and then suddenly halfway through the sequence, music starts for no apparent reason. And you sit there and go, what sort of cue
I'm
is that?
So glad I saved my
there's
money.
There's no cue for this at
don't
all.
Don't see it. No, don't see
no,
it.
No, no, no. No, no. Mirren, this is not a movie for you.
I tear down the
it's
screen.
Not, it's not even a coffee coaster.
I'm sorry. Do you know what this film is? And I don't on this show ever promote piracy because, you know, we're trying to be legit. But I tell you what, go out and torrent this one.
Yeah.
You know, don't even pay for this on DVD.
No, don't pollute your mind and waste 2 hours of your existence in this life.
So it's not even good for your bad film list?
No. Because
anyway,
it's not funny. No,
the other thing about the music, right? You know, everybody, remember in the closing scenes of Terminator 2 and they'd supposedly thought they'd wrecked Cyberdyne, that they're going through, into driving into the night and the white lines of the road going on and then you've got the music, right? And Linda Hamilton, who with her I'm Going to Have a Gravity, that's where Christian Bale's got his voice from.
Listening to
the Linda Hamilton tapes because she's talking about that all the time. Anyway, wait. Yeah. So that music's doing that, right? So at the beginning, I thought, okay, I'm open to this. And up comes, when you were talking about how exciting the credits for Star Trek were, what a juxtaposition. The credits coming up for Terminator, and it's got the jung music so loud, people laugh. They went,
They
laugh because it was
jung.
You're looking for the brown note. Why is this loud?
Yeah, because not only that, he plays the first few bars of it, like the metal banging, and then goes off into something completely different. And you sit there and go, that's not the Terminator thing.
Balinese water.
What the hell are you doing? But, okay, and this is my other problem with this film. Now, just to answer Mirren's question before I go on, yeah, I'll buy this when it comes out in DVD because it has some, you know, good, because I'm a film person.
There's
some good action sequences in it that I would like to see again.
Do you want to start on that?
We'll get back to that. And, you know, there's some interesting moments and, you know, and on DVD, Moon Bloodgood will take her top off and, you know.
Because you'll get half an hour more.
And apparently he is cut, ready for this, Katrina. McGee has actually said, but he is a fucking liar.
Yeah.
But McGee has actually said there will be half an hour of deleted scenes on the DVD.
I'm sorry, it's not Lord of the Rings. I mean, we're not actually got exposition here.
You know, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, but here's the problem. Here's another big problem with this film. Here's a film that couldn't decide what it wanted to do, so it decided to do it all. The film has 3 separate openings and then has 2 separate endings. And so you sit there and you go, okay, are we ready? I love this. One of my favorite things. You talk about this opening credits. Beautifully rendered 3D letters going across the screen, and you go, you know what they're going to spell out. They're going to come down. And so the credits start, and it comes up in white writing, Terminator Salvation. And you go, but what are all the letters in the background if it's already come up? But then they go back, and there's Terminator Salvation twice. So, you know, you sit there and go, okay, why are we doing this twice? So obviously somebody goes, we've got to do this, but that looks cool. Let's do that as well.
Oh,
then we cut into an opening scene with the Marcus Wright character, and we go, okay, here's the opening of the film. But that scene finishes, and then they put a black screen up and give us all the backstory. So we have another opening. Then we go into another scene with, and you sit there and go, how many times are we going to open this film?
God.
You know, it's like one opening is all we really need for this movie. And then at the end...
No, but see, in the case of an emergency, the more entrances you have, the more...
And then... But we get one step better, because at the end, we won't get into Linda Hamilton's voiceover at this point where they change history, but we'll get back to that in a second. Linda Hamilton does do a cameo in this. She does the voiceover of the tapes he's listening to, which is, mind you, a tape that she is recording at the end of Terminator 1. But if you listen to Terminator...
Those TDK tapes, shit, they last.
No, they last.
2018.
Through a nuclear war.
Yeah.
And not only that, though, he's listening to this tape. The wording of what she says is different to the wording of what she said at the end of Terminator 1. So she's coming, and her voice doesn't sound like...
And she did another sort of, you know, a couple of tapes, and she was... Confused.
As you said, her voice has gotten all gravelly, because in Terminator 1, when she was recording these tapes, Terminator 1...
She was normal.
She was normal. And so, of course, she's talking like she's had 500 cigarettes a day. Oh, and it's like you sit there and go...
It's a movie that jumped the shark at the beginning.
It jumped the shark. But my favorite was the ending. It carved it up. My favorite was the ending, though. All is said and done. The film comes to a conclusion, and then you get the Marcus Wright voiceover. Like all the Terminator films, it's like a voiceover at the end as they're going off into the sunset. And Marcus Wright gives this, you know, impassioned speech about what it is to be human and all, you know, that sort of crap that goes on. And you think, there's the end of the film. And he finishes. But then Christian Bale starts to talk, and we get a second.
I am the star. I'm the star,
And so Christian Bale gives a second speech, and you sit there and go, well, since when have we ever needed 2 voiceovers at the end?
You know my staying power, right? I had weed before I went in. I had an empty bladder. I didn't even drink
I thought you said I had weed before I went in.
No, weed. I had that urinated. Help. And normally I'm a good one with these sorts of movies. I'll hang in till the bitter end of the credits in case it's that little thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, nah, credits started to roll. I thought, I'm not waiting for the lights to be. I'm over this. I'm out the door.
Yeah.
Do you know what? And funnily enough, you say this, because I actually did the same thing. I stood up, the credits started rolling, the Danny Elfman went, cha-chung, cha-chung, and I went, he's going to bring the theme in at the end, and it was huge and loud, and I thought, this is sound so, because Danny Elfman is a percussionist, and so I went, this sounds fantastic. He's going to do what he did for Mission Impossible. He's going to reinvent that Mission Impossible theme. He's going to reinvent that thing. It goes, bang, 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 and then it goes off into another theme, and you go, but it's the end credits. Give me the Terminator theme.
No.
And so I went, I said, I'm out of here. I stood up. Yep. I started walking out of the cinema. But there was about 10 people who stayed in their chairs. Now, this doesn't happen very often. So I actually stopped. And I turned and I was watching the screen. And they stayed there. And I thought, have they read something that I haven't read? Is there something at the end of this movie that I don't know about? Because people don't usually stay.
Mm.
So I actually stood at the back of the cinema until the end credits. And, of course, there was nothing there. And, of course, but the beautiful thing is the 10 people who stayed all kind of went, oh. It's like they were all waiting.
Because McGee's a fucking liar.
McGee's a fucking liar. That's right. McGee's a fucking liar. All right, so I don't know if he maybe leaked something. They all thought Moon Bloodgood's nude scene would be tagged on the end or something.
And who did her eye makeup? Daryl Hannah out of Harrison Ford.
No, I was thinking Blade Runner, or the caveman film that she did. What was that thing called?
Fluffy Pants. I don't know.
But what got me about that makeup, because I actually brought that makeup when I was talking to Josh at EB Games. I said, what was with her makeup? In the first time you see her, she takes that helmet off. She's got that. And my first thought was, is it some sort of tribal makeup?
I thought she
or something
was
an American Indian or something.
Yeah,
but then that makeup disappeared, and she didn't have it.
She wasn't in battle.
She didn't have it on her face at all. Until the very last scene, and suddenly it was back. She wasn't in battle. She was at an operation.
Oh, look, all right. Can we start? I'm going to. I want. I don't. I'd love to start with Christian Bale first, but I can't because there's
Kick
so much.
Kick your fucking ass!
Thank you. Sam Worthington is, for those of you who don't know, who's an Australian actor who gives wood. You know,
the Oregon School of Acting.
He's a very wooden guy. There's moments you think, oh, he may have an emotion, but no, it goes. And to me, the fact that
To be fair, though, he was playing a robot.
No, well, he did bloody well.
And I think he did.
He
yeah.
did the angst of being, oh, dear, I seem to be full of parts that I wasn't unaware of. He he lacked the cruelty at the beginning to have a proper emotional journey to in terms of redemption from being a convicted serial killer that was about to be executed and being cruel to Helena Bonham Carter, who was a terminally ill cancer researcher that wanted his body for science.
And best line of the film, in fact,
when he kisses her
and he goes, so that's what death tastes like.
So he was cruel. But I think he could have been a bit crueler. Yeah. And because he said, I'll sign your release form if you give me a kiss.
And she's got the whole bald head chemotherapy thing.
But then she kissed him and she did a little, so she was getting into the kiss, and then that's when he pulled back and go, oh, that's what death tastes like, which was cruel, but he could have been a bit crueler.
Black comedy. Oh, yeah.
So then for the emotional arc, you're fine. And he actually had emotion. He was probably, in all of the scenes with Christian Bale, the only one acting. And so I was shocked. I thought, good on you, Sam. You've improved. Yeah, you. Secondly, his dialect was all over the shop. He moved through about 30 states of America. And then he was back in Sydney. Then he did a bit of Melbourne, possibly a bit of Brisbane
and
work.
And
then
back in America. Well, at one point, he sounded Irish. Even in that trailer, he goes, Marcus Wright. And I went, oh, what, are you Irish?
And then he said, thank you. And like I said, so say thank you with the West Coast.
Thank you.
Right, so good. Thank you. Like, I was there, like the play, and I thought, Sam, who's being Marcus, please, just sort your accent out. And I thought, no, maybe you can't do accent and emotion at the same time. That's okay. So he was a startling surprise in the good stakes, putting the dialect on the back burner. And then we come to Christian.
What happened?
My God. Well, apart from the voice, you're part of the resistance.
All Batman, no Bruce Wayne.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought, and the way he communicates with the other resistance people is by the radio. They can't talk back, right? So it's John Connor. I thought, it's like Midnight Caller radio.
You're listening to
tunes, and if you're lonely out there tonight, I'm the leader of the resistance.
G fucking lied to him too, though.
Yeah. No joke.
No, I think Batman screwed him. He just believes his own purpose.
The thing was, the voice, it didn't go anywhere. There was no, we talked it once before in a previous show about the inspiration speeches. What's going to bring the people? Mm. So you've got like the whole Mel Gibson,
Braveheart
deal. Mm. We even though we disagreed slightly about it, the latest Underworld one, Michael Sheen got to do his little we're going to have a freedom speech. But there was nothing that would engage these people. So in the movie, they're supposed to put this signal out, which is supposedly going to disable the machines, and he realises that there's all these people in the, effectively, which was a little bit like Cyberman from Doctor Who in the cutting up factories.
Oh, and
to take
War of the Worlds.
Oh,
many films we're copying here.
I know, it's just bad. Yeah. And he says, oh, you know, don't do it, you know. So effectively, supposedly in this one way, like radio-style communication, he has built up the following and the loyalty and their belief in him, for them to go, no, we're not doing it. So even though the Commander-in-Chief, who was
Michael Ironside. We'll get to him in a minute.
Yeah.
This review is going to be longer than the film.
Oh, well, all right, I'm sorry. I'll press on.
God, so, the two of you, move on.
So friggin' annoying. There was no reason why he would inspire them to stop. Okay, so fine. That's him. There was no chemistry between he and Bryce Dallas Howard. I disagree with you. I think she did a shit job, which is a little bit like your, if you've
I
only got a short of...
Well, I didn't say she did a
no,
good
you
job.
Said she was wasted.
That's what I'm saying. She's a better actress than that.
Well, hello, the Eric Banner thing. It's Mirren said this. She's on screen for 30 seconds.
McGee probably fucking lied to her too. My point is that they put her on screen. Nothing to do.
She had to snog Christian Bale once.
Oh,
that's
reason enough. There.
Yeah. But now I believe in you. She had to do the whole I believe in you thing. No wonder Claire Danes, who hasn't been acting herself for a while now, even when she's been on screen, ran away from this at a million miles an hour. There was no. And don't forget, in her character, she's in fact a vet.
Yeah.
All right. The fact that they're throwing antibiotics around.
Heart surgery.
I know. Oh, can I just say, we're in spoiler land, right? So we know that the Sam Worthington character, who is Marcus Wright, has his human heart still, which has got a great strong beat. We discovered that, right?
A strong
heart, right? So Christian Bale's been shoved through the chest with a pole, as you do, and he's going to die. So they're all standing around looking a bit tragic. And so Sam Worthington just says, have my heart. I thought, hello, Tissue matching? What have you got? You know, you're all living on the smell of an oily rag. You're throwing antibiotics. You seem to be able to put Christian Bale, in my count, counted crash, what, three helicopters or two?
Yeah, yeah.
Two in the first 10 minutes. I thought, stop giving this guy a helicopter. But they're able to pull him out of their ass.
Nobody ever actually asked the question, which is, does he know how to fly?
So they're coming up with helicopters. They've all got matching uniforms. They look smick. She's got makeup. They've got antibiotics. And suddenly, he's now going to be able to get a heart that they haven't tissue matched. Don't forget, this guy died in 2003.
By lethal injection.
So he's now been kicking around with this heart on borrowed time for 15 years. But no, no. Oh, that's the future. Okay, well, you can have, you know, rejection suppression drugs. I know I keep getting back to medicine, but that really shat me.
Yeah, but also the fact that they performed open heart they performed a heart transplant in the open on a battlefield.
Yeah, and there's a bit of dust blowing around. Yeah.
You guys, this movie,
the lines just were whipped in, right? So we had the genesis of the line, come with me if you want to leave. We had the genesis of
no,
the line.
Oh, no, wait.
He did. The boy said it to him.
But it's not the genesis of the line because this is the future, not the past.
No, it's the genesis of the line where the Kyle character first hears it before he then sees it back to the girl when he's a man.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
Stay with the time travel.
All right.
And then the
we're
going to
approach the time travel in a second.
Right? So the Sam Worthington character says to him, don't hold a gun unless you're going to use it. So, of course, he says that to the Sarah Connor character, right? And so there was a bit, that's a little moment. Yeah, that's fine. And then it was weird. The end of the movie, it was like, but it's no fate which we make. And they were just stuffing in the lines for the little recognition all the way along.
And, of course, we have John Connor say, I'll be back when he leaves, which was just so badly delivered. And, of course, for those who have heard about it, yes, there is a cameo by the T-800 Arnold Schwarzenegger model, which of course, is a CGI creation using footage from the original Terminator and all image mapped and everything. Because if you read the end credits, it says Arnold Schwarzenegger stills from Hemdale film. And there is absolutely no logical reason at all for them to use this character at all, because in Terminator 3, if you want to go back to, and Terminator 3 was a crap film in itself, but Terminator 3 actually has this point where, yes, John Connor was killed by a T-800 in the future because Skynet used it. By that particular one, because Skynet deemed his affection to that machine to be his weakness. But there's no affection here at this point. He just storms out and starts fucking killing him.
I know.
Starts beating the
and
crap out of him.
And this is why everybody hates this movie except Roger Ebert. And it's that's because Roger Ebert's been ill.
Now, we've got a couple of other logic flaws. Mirren's right. We are running out of time. So settle back for 1 second. I'll give you a moment. And I'll give you a moment.
You've written a thesis.
She always does.
Can I do one more thing?
All right,
Mark. All right. You know more about film shooting angles than I do, right?
Yep.
So we've got a whole lot of action scenes and we've got the ubiquitous, I seem to be hanging out of a vehicle while shooting at someone pursuing us, but I'm actually approaching something that if I don't get within the confines of the vehicle, I'm going to be cut in half, right? That moment.
Oh.
Right? Okay. So one, I like the shot to be from the front or wherever so that you see the person whip in as you see the object of death whip by them, right?
Right.
Where's the camera? In the friggin' car. So I was like, oh, we're in. And you know me, I don't notice stuff like that, but I felt there was a bunch of those.
Yeah, some of those didn't work very well, but some of the action sequences work quite nicely. I think that, as I was saying, that opening scene in the helicopter with Christian Bale, he crashes the helicopter, but the way McGee has actually shot it is this beautiful shot inside the cockpit, and it gets all dusty, of course, because they're in the middle of a field.
It's just a fucking camera that's stuck to the ceiling.
No.
And then it stays with its orientation, not ours.
No,
rolled around three times.
No. What we have in that scene, what makes it
made her mad too.
I know. What makes that scene so clever is the fact that yes, it seems that way, but then once they've landed and what your orientation is all mixed up because of how you've landed, he still seems to be sitting upright, undoes his seatbelt, and hits the ceiling. So he falls out. The camera spins around.
Yeah, that wasn't rocket science.
At that point. But then you have the camera roll out of the cockpit with him and follow. That's actually quite a difficult camera move to achieve and is actually handled very nicely. And, you know, for a film that has so many negatives, give me a positive where I can give it.
Yeah, but it's
now,
it's shite.
Logic.
It's shite, and you don't go to see a movie, you know.
Logic. Sam Worthington walks into Skynet. Makes his way into Skynet, walks into the main, office, right? And there are computer...
Hello, welcome to the city of death.
But there are computer consoles and screens in this, central room. They're fucking... fucking robots. What do they need computer consoles and screens? All they need to plug in an interface. Speaking of plugging in an interface, John Connor goes sneaking into Skynet, gets to the door, plugs in the USB cable, types override, and the door is open.
I missed that.
He's in there going, pardon?
I thought the Sam Worthington character should have just gone, come in. I thought he said come in the north entrance, and he'd have gone, the door.
No, he walks up, plugs in his he plugs in a USB. It's supposed to be homage to the second film when he goes up to the ATM machine, and, you know, he's got his thing, he puts it in the ATM. But in that film, it runs through codes and, you know, all this stuff. And he goes, come on, come on, come on. And
this
he plugs it in, he goes, override. Door's open. He's like, oh, fuck off.
I'm tired by
now,
that.
All right,
time.
Now, look, all right, we've got wasted moments with Arnold Schwarzenegger. We've got wasted moments with everything in this film. All I can think is, from a film's point of view, and I think this is why we needed to end at Terminator 1. Because even Terminator 2 runs into the same logic issue of time travel.
What was
which
3?
Is 3 was
stupid one with Claire Danes.
Oh, with the girl.
Judgment Day.
Oh, with
no,
the female
called?
The
what's
female robot.
Rise of the Machines.
Oh, that was stupid.
Yeah, it was. But the point is this. Skynet, in the first film, sends back this killer Terminator. And they send back Kyle Reese. Oh, mind you, the only decent performance I thought in this film was Anton Yelchin as Kyle Reese, who was Chekhov in the new Star Trek.
Right. Yes.
I thought he was lovely.
Yeah, he was good.
All right. So,
excuse me. How unimportant or unused was the mute little girl?
Oh, what was her purpose?
That she was called Star. I'm sorry. Can you say the Lost Boys? Get serious. There was the mute little boy out of the Lost Boys.
Absolutely. Well, and the only purpose of Moon Bloodgood's character was to show her boobs, and she didn't get to do it. So,
isn't that,
you know,
Halle Berry and Will Smith's girl? Her name is Jade Berry, or is that that? I'm noticing in the credits.
Look it up. I don't know.
I did.
I can't keep up with their children. But anyway. Time travel.
They're short of a quid.
Time travel, okay? In the first film, they send them back, and Reese actually says to her, we destroyed the time machine.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
So we can assume that by Terminator 2, they've rebuilt it.
Yes.
All right? What do the smart robots that are taking over the world and seem to be defeating everybody do? They send a robot back to kill John Connor. It's a fucking time machine. Why wouldn't you send back the highly sophisticated robot that they now have years later to the same period or earlier to when she's a child and knock her off then? Or as somebody pointed out on something I read, why wouldn't they send them back to like 1901, giving the technology to somebody so that they can actually do their war earlier when human beings are even less sophisticated, you know? This whole concept of every time they send them back, it's further into the future. Why would they keep getting closer to Judgment Day?
Maybe
you would
they
keep going
paid
back.
Their computer bill.
It doesn't make sense. Or alternatively, if they've rebuilt the time machine, why would they send back one Terminator? Why wouldn't they send back 25 Terminators to exactly the same spot of the same time period and take her out in one massive thing? You know, there is no reason that they would send back one Terminator again at a time.
You know, I understand. I'm with you where you're heading. It's time travel. There is no friggin' logic. The minute you play that, and we're getting there before I met myself, before I had
exactly.
a sandwich.
Exactly, and this is my point. This is why I think they needed to end Terminator after Terminator 1, because you start running into massive logic holes.
There's no logic problems. There's no logic in time travel anyway. So I think it's open slather. It's like saying you've got a magic wand. Who gives a shit? As long as the entertainment holds and there's some
internal
consistency.
If you're going to start playing with things like time travel, even if it's not realistic, it has to be within its own laws of the film.
I understand.
And they're not sticking to their own laws within the film. And that's the problem. And the problem is that every Terminator film, the further they keep going down, the more the holes start opening up. We need to stop this series before it goes any further.
Well, I was happy to end it too, because there was a lot of humour in that, except Linda Hamilton, when she lost that amount of body fat, lost her whimsy.
No, it's not bullshit.
And
there
was
I'm
the
trying
voice,
to find
you're right, she had that same...
You're in the background muttering.
They had that same...
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, I think the general consensus is that this is a film to avoid. I think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of talent.
Well, you've given it far too much screen time.
Well, you know, because this is a major geek event to have this film, and
we have to talk
about... I think the appropriate... The catch line on the poster was, the end begins. I think so.
I think my favorite moment, you haven't mentioned it, but when you said it to me, I thought that was funny. When he goes, "You're not human," and he goes, "Oh, yes, I am," and just pulls out his chip. I thought that was funny.
This is the other one. Sam Worthington. Helena Bonham Carter on the computer screen basically says, "You have to do what we say, and you're going to go back, and you're going to destroy everybody," and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, "No," he goes, "I've got my own choice." Reaches behind his head and goes, "Rip, tear," and pulls out the control chip. What? Yeah. It's just under the skin?
Yeah, so I could have done
what
that.
Is this crap? You know?
There we go.
Oh, look, I was trying to follow it from an anatomical thing. He had his own heart, but he didn't have his own legs, and he didn't have his own skin. But he had a cortex somewhere, but we didn't understand what the spinal connection was because, of course, how was the heart innervated? And then, I mean, don't even go into the anti-rejection things again. But still, you're right. It's dumb.
It's dumb. That's the problem. The overriding words are, it's dumb. Look.
And if it's a good movie, we know damn well, if something is a good movie, we will forgive almost anything.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and you said it beautifully. That first one was low budget, but it sucked you in. They had a budget of $1.10, but their characters were well drawn.
And
it skipped along.
Absolutely.
And hello, because it was a good movie, nobody questioned that the robot had an Austrian accent.
No, absolutely not.
You know, think about that. I mean, it was like, why of all accents?
Because the one human they captured, it had the Austrian accent.
And I mean, here's another point as well. I mean, with the whole logic issue, it's 2018 in the new Terminator film. Right? Yeah. Well, in 2018, they have this ultra-sophisticated one-off prototype Sam Worthington robot that is so perfectly human that he doesn't even know he's a machine. And yet, in the very first movie, they sent back Arnold. And their new big technology is the T-800, which is the Arnold model. Why aren't they building more of the Sam Worthington models?
Because, I can't believe you missed that. Didn't you see all of the other robots standing around that had rotting flesh hanging off? They hadn't sorted it out. Obviously, the little micro...
No, yeah, I know, I saw that. But the point is that their culmination of the technology is the T-800. Yes. How does Sam Worthington fit into this equation?
He's a side project. He's, you know, somebody had a few spare parts and we seem to have a convicted dead criminal. We just pop him off.
I like the fact that he has a heart. I like the fact that he has a heart, but Arnold Schwarzenegger's model has an atomic bomb.
You know what? There must be a lot of people out there wandering around angry. That's just, we're going to have to start at some
there
sort of...
There are angry, confused people out there.
There'll be some AA.
TA, Terminator's
Anonymous. Yeah, there'll be people that I saw this and I'm fucking angry.
You know what? I got to say, I'd love to hear what James, and you know, he'll be political and he won't say anything, but I would really like to know behind closed doors what James Cameron thinks of this and Terminator
3. And I think he'd be skipping on the spot. Hey, you rooted it, and so mine are going to glow forever
and
in the firmament.
That's right, I agree with that. And my thing is always about the actors, and so I'm saying keep an eye on Christian's career because I think that
if he doesn't stop one whispering and two hissing and three having hissy fits, yes, he's going to be
trouble. He's become a joke.
Stopped
and you know what?
The prestige.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, yes. McGee needs to get his hand off of it.
Yeah.
Stop directing feature films because let's face it. All right, McGee's last couple of feature films, we got Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
If McGee doesn't get his hand off it, he's going to end up like David Carradine.
Too soon. Now he directed the film of Friday Night Lights or something like that. Didn't he directed some football film which was supposed to be okay? I haven't seen it, but
it's about sport. Why would I watch it?
Exactly. But the point is that this is in between two atrocious movies. Yet, as a TV producer, he's been very successful. As a TV producer, he produced The O.C. Now, not everybody's cup of tea, and I don't like it particularly, but it was very popular at the time, The O.C., and he produced Chuck, which is a terrific series, you know?
Oh, Chuck's doing well, isn't it?
Well, Chuck was a threat of being canceled at one point, but it's been picked up, and it's a great show. And you look at it as a TV producer, you go, McGee, stick with that. As a film director, you're a fucking liar.
Go back to MTV.
You're a fucking liar, all right? Yeah. Now, all right, I should say here at this point that I don't know if McGee is a fucking liar or not, and don't sue me for defamation.
Allegedly,
okay? And you know what? And you know, I quite liked the first Charlie's Angels movie, which he also directed. It was nonsense, but it was all right, you know? I hated the second Charlie's Angels.
And just to shut you two the fuck up, because you won't go this fucking stupid movie, I would just like to say very quickly to anybody out there, keep an eye. I will be keeping an eye out. I'm going to do the lifestyle section, even though we don't have one. I saw this on Huffington Post, and I can't find it again. A woman was carrying on saying, I can't believe they're doing this, and she was laughing, but it evidently is true. Why do porn stars have such beautiful skin? We all know.
Oh,
because, you know, they get the cum all over them constantly. constantly. There's evidently a new cream out called, it's artificially made. It's not real sperm, so men aren't making deposits, but it's artificially made sperm. They say it's called Spermicide or something like that, and it's a cream that's got sperm in it so that you'll have nice soft skin. So I will. I just want you to know that I will do my duty and go out there and try to find this for you. And
where you using bull semen as well? They were talking about using that. But they're working their way through unpleasant bodily fluids. Remember they had the placenta cream?
Well, they're still doing that. Demi Moore is having the leeches and stuff. And I think the sperm cream is actually kind of...
No, leeches are good because they're very helpful after, traumatic surgery.
Yeah, but she's saying that it purifies the blood all over her body.
Oh, that's garbage.
Come on.
Puts them on for the fun of it, not because of surgery.
To make her skin clear. What? Well, now you can use sperm cream instead.
On a clear day.
So I will go look for that.
Okay, you go look for that. In the meantime, we're going to wrap this one up for this week. We will be back. I have no idea who the guests will be next week at this point. I'm hoping
because I can be Skyped in, but only very shortly because I'm on a stupid stick from Telstra. I hate you, Telstra.
We'll Skype you in if you find out more about the sperm cream. Okay.
Okay. Good.
and in the meantime, everybody go out there.
And hi to Ben out there. Hi Ben.
Hi Ben. At Ben's Texture. How are you? We actually. Because of that new time that we're going on when we go live, Ben, you should be able to come on quite easily. So
that'd
it should
be cool.
Fit within your time frame. So hopefully we'll get Ben from Ben's Tech Show onto the show. I also want to do a quick shout out to everybody who runs the Slash Filmcast. I get a lot of information and news from Slash Film. Great website, slashfilm.com, and their official podcast, Slash Filmcast, is fabulous. Probably one of my favorite film podcasts out there, and I send them a greeting. Hopefully they'll send me one back.
And Atomic Betty didn't send us anything this
week? No, Atomic Betty didn't send any comments, but then again, we have been gone for 2 weeks.
Hi, Betty.
Atomic Betty can't comment on nothing. Hello, lovely blank air I listen to.
Well, that's right.
She had a time machine.
Just as a reminder to everybody, if you do subscribe through iTunes, please leave comments on iTunes because that helps us go up the ranks to help us get discovered. If you have any comments on anything that we've discussed, if you have an opinion on Terminator Salvation, I would love to hear it. Send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com.
Tell them you disagree with them.
If you totally disagree with me, I would love to hear it. Now, also, just as a reminder, we have a survey on the front page of our website. This is for PodTrack. It's a very short survey. It's just to helps us try and get some sponsors and so forth.
Please
go take the survey.
Please. I know it's boring.
It's boring. It'll literally take you a minute to do the survey. And
M&M's to you, America.
And remember, if we've reviewed this and we saved you 124 minutes of shit,
that's right.
That means if you spend 1 minute filling in the survey, you've spent 100.
You went to KiwiLand.
Apparently. Absolutely. You can then get 121 minutes back in your life.
Exactly.
And rather than going to see Terminator Salvation, give us some feedback on iTunes. There's a 5 minutes well spent.
And then you can still wipe out the fridge.
And call your mum.
All right. In the meantime, everybody go see more movies because all of life's questions are answered in the movies. But McGee just made a fucking liar out of me because your
life's,
life's questions are not answered in that particular movie. But
there's obfuscation.
And then we'll go out. Let's go out with it. How does the music go? Chug 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 chug
chug chug chug chug chug chug. Talk to you next week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, welcome back to Geek Actually.
Are you practicing openings for someone's mom?
No, I was going to say something. I was actually back in my mind going to say something witty about the fact that we weren't here last week, and then at the last minute went, no. My brain just fused.